Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Kiwi, and with me is BP.
Hi!
You'll notice the absence of Eric. I'm not sure if that means it'll be improved, but he edits this, so you'll probably never hear that.
Ew.
BP and I traveled to Kansas City a few weeks ago, and we got to visit the Pawn and Pint board game cafe.
Shout out to Pawn and Pint.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I thought it was a really good atmosphere, and I thought the board game selection was really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got a chance to try out a bunch of games that were new to us. Cue music. Eric, edit here. So the first game we played was Morels by Brent Povis. It has art by Vince Dorse, and it was published by Two Lantern Games, which, from my research, is actually owned by Brent Povis. He's got a couple other games as well. So the game's description. The woods are old growth dappled with sunlight. Delicious mushrooms beckon from every grove and hollow. Morels may be the most sought after in these woods, but there are many tasty and valuable varieties awaiting the savvy collector. Bring a basket if you think it's your lucky day. Forage at night, and you will be all alone when you stumble upon a bonanza. If you're hungry, put a pan on the fire and bask in the aroma of chanterelles as you sauté them in butter. Feeling mercantile? Sell porcini to a local aficionados for information that will help you find what you seek deep in the forest.
Sounds ominous.
Yeah. All right. Mechanics were card drafting, hand management, and set collection. BP, you picked this game out. Why'd you pick this game out?
Well, the way that Pawn and Pint, and I think when we're back with Eric sometime, we could do a bonus episode on board game cafes and our thoughts.
Bonus episode.
Oh my god. I married you. Yeah, so the way they have their games organized is they had a section for two players, and since there were two of us,
indeed,
I went to that section. And I saw this, and I personally like mushrooms. I think they're delicious and tasty, and therefore I thought I'd give it a try.
Okay.
Mostly because I like mushrooms.
Yeah, that's fair. I'd heard of this game before. I think I heard Suzanne talk about it, and it actually has an app, which is the first time that I heard them talk about it was Suzanne and Mandy talking about the app.
Yay. Shout out to Dice Tower and the ladies.
Yep. So in Morels, it's got like a line of cards, and essentially the way you draft is there's the front of the line has cheaper cards, and then the back of the line, as you get further towards the back, you have to pay sticks, which is the currency in this game. I think thematically, it's supposed to be like the sticks you would use to like push around leaves and find the mushrooms and stuff.
See, but then why aren't you given a pig?
Well, because pigs are truffles, aren't they?
Don't they also help with mushrooms?
I don't know. Yeah, so you're drafting these cards in order to get sets, and then you can do one or two things with the sets. You could either sell them for sticks, because that's what I sell things for traditionally is sticks. Or you can cook them in a pan if you have a pan card, and then you could add things like butter was one. Do you remember what the other one was?
Cider,
that's right. To earn more points. And then basically whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. So theme. What'd you think of the theme? I mean, I feel like you picked it out because of the theme.
Right, because mushrooms, and I like them. Just as you were reading over that, I had a couple thoughts about the theme, like where were the poisonous mushrooms?
There was that one, what was it, like the death cap one, where if it was out there, you couldn't do certain things until you get rid of it, or you had to discard if you end up picking it up. That's what it was.
I don't think any of us ever picked
no,
it up.
No, we were able to skip over most of them.
Yeah, that would be my only thing about foraging. And then the whole moon dark card things were kind of interesting.
Yeah, so when a moon was selected, you got to pull from the night deck, and it was a much smaller deck. And the night deck had, like, instead of one mushroom, it was two of a different mushroom. So it wasn't so much that you had different mushrooms in the night deck. You just had cards with, like, double the number of mushrooms.
Yeah, so I'm wondering how that fits into the theme. Do you go foraging for mushrooms at night?
Maybe it depends on the mushroom.
Maybe it depends on the moon.
Maybe it depends on both. I have no idea.
I know. I've never gone for mushrooms foraging myself. I feel like you would need some skills for that. More skills than sticks.
So art, I feel like the art reminded me a lot of like the 70s cartoon art.
Interesting.
Looking at the box art, it's got like a tree with some leaves and a couple of morels like in the middle of the forest, which makes sense since the game is actually called Morels. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's what the art reminded me of, like just 70s cartoon with like sort of more jaggedy lines. And I could imagine that some of the art in the cards would be in like the Hobbit movie.
Yeah, like the old animated Hobbit movie. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. When was the it made again?
Published in 2013, I think. 2012. Yep. And then there was an expansion in 2017, apparently. Mechanics. Need to review them again. Card drafting, hand management, set collection.
I love how you look at me about these mechanics. I mean, yes, those are mechanics and they were used in the game.
Yeah. I mean, when I imagine, I don't know if the mechanics went so well with the theme because the theme is supposed to be like foraging and foraging. Like, so you knew what cards were on the table and you were drafting from that. So that seemed less like foraging because, you know, you don't necessarily know where stuff is when you forage.
Right.
So, I mean, I liked the mechanics. I thought that they made a good game. I'm just not sure they went with the theme.
I go along with that.
What about rules?
Okay, so I've been waiting for rules because when you, I remember this, when you explained them to me at the cafe, I was like, I don't understand what's going on with these sticks. I don't understand really what I'm doing. Let's just like do some playthrough. Oh, wait, that's like every game. but yeah, I don't know the way the rules are were explained. I don't know if that's how they were also laid out. It just sounded more confusing than I think it was.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does a little bit. Yeah. So the rule book itself, like I think one of the big things you find like the negative for a board game cafe is those games go through a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So who knows how many people had played that particular copy of Morels. But the instruction booklet had been like stapled back together. The staple was kind of in a weird place. So it was hard to figure out like, okay, what was the actual first page? What was the actual last page? Cause I don't think the pages were numbered either. So there was a lot of flipping back and forth to make sure like, okay,
everything was in the right order.
Yeah. Everything was in the right order. So, but the sticks, so I believe it was like the first two cards in the line were free. And then every card after that, you paid one additional stick.
I wonder, it was just a two-player game though, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't think we ever bought cards.
No, I think generally we picked from the front of the row. I think maybe I like once or twice, but like it just seemed weird to sell the cards when you were could get more from points. Player interaction.
I mean, it's a two-player game where you're drawing for each other.
Yeah, I think the only player interaction is if I take the card that you want.
Sure.
But like more cards come out and they're constantly sliding and going away. So I think the player interaction is what you would find in a two-player game.
Or a deck building game.
Or a deck builder, yeah.
Or I guess set collection.
Yeah.
Deck card drafting.
Yeah.
I got to get these mechanics right.
Eventually, one day. When we finally end the podcast, you'll know one. Yeah, I didn't think there was a ton of player interaction. There was just a little bit. There was nothing like, there were no cards that I could play that would affect BP. The only thing I could affect is taking a card that BP wanted. That was really the only interaction that I saw. Would you play it again?
I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to seek it out, but if again, we found ourselves in a game cafe and it was there and we needed something. It was pretty quick, pretty easy.
Yeah, I think I would find other two-player games. Mm-hmm.
I still like mushrooms, so the whole idea of cooking mushrooms sounds delicious.
That's fair. Yeah, I think I would find another two-player game, though. That's just me.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we go together and we're the only two, we might not be playing it again.
That's true. Pause momentarily for editing.
Do we really need to edit?
Have to pause again. Just kidding. All right. The second game we played was Machikoro and I'm going to butcher this.
Masayo Suganuma?
Yeah, I'll buy that.
Suganuma.
And then artist was Noboru Hota, Jason Kingsley, who also did Lanterns and Wasteland Express Delivery Service. Ian Paravel, who worked on Cold Express. And Mirko Suzuki, who did Race for the Galaxy and Roll for the Galaxy. It was published by IDW and Panosaurus. And it was a 2015 Spiel des Jahres nominee. So the description, welcome to the city of Machikoro. You've just been elected mayor. Congrats. Unfortunately, the citizens have some pretty big demands. Jobs, a theme park, a couple of cheese factories, and maybe even a radio tower. A tough proposition since the city currently consists of a wheat field, a bakery, and a single dye. How would you describe that cover?
Yeah, so box art is actually really fascinating. It's got like that late 1950s, early 60s, so mid-century coloring and cartoon aspect to it. So it's got a couple mountain peaks in the background with exactly a radio tower, again, in that very mid-century straight lines. Kind of think Jetsons, future techie in that 1960s format.
Yeah, or what they thought was super techie.
Right, in the 1960s.
Yeah. I think I picked this one out because we had tried to play it at Gen Con for the last 2 years, and we were like, damn it, we're doing it this time.
Even though I think we both felt pretty guilty taking it off the shelf without Eric.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, Eric.
Meh.
Yeah.
We still played it anyway.
So in the game, you're trying to develop your city. So you've got money. You can use it to buy additional buildings to add to your city. There are also some landmarks that you're trying to build. I believe it was 4 total landmarks. And the first player to build all 4 won the game. And then as you're playing, on each person's turn, they're rolling a die, either 1 or 2 dice. And then the sum of those dice rolled, if that matches buildings, then you got stuff. And there were some buildings that went off of only your roll, some buildings that went off another player's roll, some buildings that went off any roll. So it's had a little bit of an engine builder. The mechanics were just card drafting and dice rolling, which dice rolling as a mechanic just seems sort of weird. Like it probably goes into something else, but whatever. So you're just trying to basically build up money so that you can build your landmarks and in the game.
So you, when you pulled this off, it was not in the 2-player only. It is normally for more than 2 players.
Yeah, so it's a 2-to-4 player, okay. And we played it 2-player. So it could be like a game, you know, we've had a couple of people already tell us like, oh, Skull, you've got to play it with more than 3 people, which might be the case, but our experience wasn't great. Machikoro, that might be another thing where someone's like, oh, well, you really need to play Machikoro with more than 2 people. But yeah, theme-wise, what'd you think?
It's cute. I mean, at least thinking about the theme and the art, I do realize I'm mixing these two together. But the idea of building it's a city or a town, yeah, I mean, it's a good theme. The art on the box was way cooler than ended up happening. The art's on the card. And if it's a kind of card drafting, right, building, I don't know the mechanics. I'm just throwing words out there like vanilla and
card drafting.
Strawberry.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So the cards themselves, I felt like they were okay. I don't know. It seemed a little lackluster in compared to how cute the box art is.
Yeah, I think because the box art kind of combines all the different types of things that you could get in the game, whereas the cars were just like that individual element. So I feel like when you combine them all, it does make for a much more fun picture. Whereas when you put them as single elements, it's kind of meh. Yeah, I thought, I mean, the theme was good. Art, yeah, I would agree with you. I think the box art was a lot more fun than the individual cards. Mechanics, I did like the card drafting. I'm surprised that like engine building wasn't a mechanic, just because, you know, some of the cards played off of other cards, so you could get a little bit more like, hey, if I do this, I get to do this. But maybe that's just because you're going purely off dice rolls and not like gizmos or wingspan where you're getting more based on the actions that happen.
Those were a bunch of words.
Yeah, those were a bunch of words. What do you think about the mechanics?
Strawberries and vanilla.
Yeah.
They were all, I mean, all right. I don't know. It was just, I think, the overall impression, and I'm sure mechanics had a part in this, was just a little bit of a letdown.
Yep.
To the whole, especially now knowing it was just Bill DeShara nomination, just there seemed to be a lot of hype about it that just did not get played out.
Yeah. So I had seen like maybe one or two videos of people playing it, and I was like, okay, I think I'll like this. But then when we were playing it, I just was like, nah, like this isn't really a game that I would want to play again. But it was a game that I thought I really wanted to play. I mean, we tried for 2 years at Gen Con to get a game of it. I mean, we didn't try super hard. We signed up for it and it just never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, player interaction, like there's a little bit, but it's not like a take that type of element. It's just, you know, and we weren't playing it. I think the way you're supposed to play it is, you know, I roll the dice, I announce the number that I have, and you have to remember that you have a value that goes off of that, and then it just keeps going. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we were playing it, it was more like, oh, hey, I got an 11, you get a thing, and I get a thing. It was sort of like maybe friendlier, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I thought overall, like, the player interaction wasn't there because there were enough buildings that everybody could get buildings, so...
I mean, obviously, you won and got there first. Did you win Morels as well? Did I win any games
that day? No, you didn't win any, games. Would you play it again?
I don't know. Maybe. I definitely would not try to see if it's available at Gen Con again.
Yeah. If it's available and we had nothing else to play and Eric was there,
yeah,
I would play it just so that he could also be disappointed in it.
Eric, we're going to bring you into this disappointment.
Yeah,
with us.
We can't be disappointed on our own. We need you to be there too. Yeah, so I think, I mean, I don't think I would play it again.
Yeah.
I wasn't impressed. I think Space Station, that might be what it's called. I might be having the name wrong. Apparently, it's supposed to be like a much better Machi Koro. So
I could see that kind of happening.
Yeah, somebody designing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pause for editing. Bonus episode.
I don't know
why I do that either. All right. So the third game we played was called Hounded by Clint Bohedy. You think that's how I say it?
Sure.
Clint Bohedy. He was also the artist, and it was published by Atlas. The description was very short. In Hounded, players will either be the cunning fox trying to elude capture or the determined hunter trying to hunt down the fox.
Can I just say right there that... I know eventually we're going to talk about, would you play it based on X, Y, or Z? A short description, I think, automatically is a draw. I don't know, just in writing in general, I have always learned, try to say what you need to say as clearly and succinctly to keep your reader engaged. And I feel like this does that.
Do you think it's because there's a little bit of mystery?
I don't think there's any. Well, I mean, obviously it doesn't tell you what the mechanics are or how you're going to play, but it tells.
Yeah, you're either a fox or you're a hunting party.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. So mechanics are modular board, point-to-point movement, and variable player powers. So the box art. So BP,
I did pick this. Came off the two-player shelf. So two reasons I picked it up off the shelf, because it was two-player shelf. And I was just kind of trying to look at stuff, and I'd picked up a few other things that were kind of medievally, you know, in looking nature. And then I noticed out of the corner of the eye, our food delivery person show up, because at Pond and Pint, they actually, you can deliver food in, although they have drinks and things for you to get while you were there. Again, great shout out. Really enjoyed the atmosphere. And so in my distraction of food arriving, I had kind of picked it up to start looking at it and just kept it in my hand. And so you had looked at it as well. And if I am not mistaken, it came in a 10,
it wasn't a 10.
10 yep. box, which I know my husband is a little bit drawn to. And later, one of the servers who works there stepped by and was like, oh, I saw you playing that. It is one of my favorite games. Mm-hmm. So I basically picked it up again because it was on the two-player shelf. I got distracted and showed it to you because you came up and were like, are we going to play this? And I was like, I don't know. Sure. It was the tin. You were attracted to the tin box.
Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Well, I'd also never heard of it.
Yeah.
At least, so the first two games, Morels and Machikoro, I'd heard of both, and I'd never heard of this game. So there's a curiosity piece there as well.
Okay, excellent.
As a person who has studied art history, how would you describe... I feel like this style is...
You're something. Going for cubism.
Cubism.
I think is what you're trying to describe it at. So the cover has the title of the game on top, and then, again, a very short description on the bottom. And I think it was the short description on the box art itself says a two-player fox hunting game of trickery and entrapment. And I think that idea of trickery also kind of intrigued me because I like to pretend that I can be a trickster.
Okay.
It is definitely pretend. But so the box itself, it's got a picture of your kind of generalized stereotyped British hunter, even has a monocle and then a fox, but definitely in that stylized of cubism, but enough cubism so you could actually recognize the figures more easily. So I'm thinking like Picasso's Mademoiselle des Avignon, I believe. It's called, or his later piece, Guernica. Guernica. You know, the Spanish city that then Nazis helped bomb in the Spanish Civil War in the 30s.
Oh, no, I don't know anything.
I know. People don't talk enough about the Spanish Civil War.
Accidental history lesson. All right. So in this game, you're using tiles to build a 7x7 grid, and the tiles are upside down. And then one player is going to control the fox, and the other player is going to control a hunting party. And in the hunting party, you had the hunter, a terrier, a bulldog, and then there was three of another type of dog. Do you remember what it was?
Weren't they just like beagles, hounds?
Yeah, some kind of, hound. And they each of those pieces had a different way that it could move. So some of them could move diagonally. Some of them could move,
orthogonally.
Or orthogonally. Yep. I do love that one. And the idea was, is the hunting party was supposed to get the fox, either within one space of the hunter so that he could be captured, or to a space where they didn't have a legal move. And then the fox was trying to reveal tiles on the board, because if they got to a point where there were 43 of the 49 tiles revealed, then the fox won and they were able to get away.
Couldn't the fox also win if they got those three timepieces?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there were three.
Kind of representing like a day.
Yeah, there were three tiles.
If the fox for more than a day, he's going to get away.
Yeah. So there was a morning, afternoon, and a night tile. And if you were able to reveal all three of those tiles, the fox could also win that way. Yep. Mm-hmm. So a theme, I mean, that's not a theme that I've ever seen
Should
before.
Should we just go ahead and say that you won?
I mean, I wasn't going to do recaps.
What position did you play in this?
Because sure. I was the hunting party.
Yes.
And BP was the fox. The rule book did say that the hunting party is harder to play. Probably because every piece moves differently.
Mm-hmm. The server, when I talked to her, when I told her I was the fox, she's like, yeah, that she thinks was harder in her opinion.
Yeah. And when we were reading the rules and going through it, I thought the fox would be harder too, just because you have only, because what was it? You could move orthogonally. No, you can move any direction and you can move three up to three spaces. Yeah. I feel like, and you're going up against.
Yeah. So it's kind of like using
six other pieces
mechanics like you would in chess, that type of strategy.
Yeah. Moving your king around.
That's just strategy, though, not mechanics.
Yeah. But I thought like theme wise.
Oh, yeah. I think it totally fits.
Yeah, it definitely fit. The mechanics and the theme, I think, went well together. Mm-hmm. The art. I mean, it was fun. It was different. I don't think I've seen a game. It was definitely a different type of game.
And the pieces were made of wood. The like hunter and the fox and all that.
Yep, which I do like.
Yeah,
I thought the game was well made. The art fit. Yeah, the style went well together.
I think the card art was sometimes a little confusing, but the rule book was pretty.
Yeah, it had a very good. Yeah, because there was even a tile that had on one side was the description of each of the different tiles you could, and on the other side was how each piece moved. So there was a nice quick reference tile in there too. Rules, I felt like the rules were easy to explain.
Yeah.
They were very short. They sort of had to be just because small box, small tin, so you can't have a big instruction booklet.
Yeah. No, and I feel like that's what the designer, again, in his short description and everything was really going for. Something that was, again, very kind of transparent, simple, but yet offered enough of a mental challenge, if you will.
Yeah, and then player interaction. I mean, this game is nothing but player interaction. So I thought it was a good two-player game.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Would you play it again?
I totally would.
Yeah, I would too. I feel like that's one of those games, you know, because two-player is generally how we end up playing a lot when we're just at home. So I feel like this would be a game that I think if I saw it for sale somewhere, I might pick it up just because it is small. It'd be easy to carry around if you wanted to.
Yeah, small travel game, two players, again, very quick and easy to learn, but with a sophisticated nature to it.
And the modular board changes it up every time. Yeah. It doesn't take up a lot of space to play, but I would definitely play it again. And I would probably own it if I saw it for sale.
I think it's better than, in my opinion, as far as those small kind of portable games than the epic ones, like Epic Tiny Galaxies or whatever.
Yeah, which I do enjoy the Tiny Galaxies, but I think because that one could go up to four players as well. But I think portability wise, this was a much smaller box than that as well. And I think Tiny Epic Galaxies, depending on how many players you have, could take up a lot of table space.
And a lot of time. This was pretty fast.
Yeah, this game, I think it was 15 to 25 minutes. And I think even with setting it up and learning the rules real quick on the fly, maybe 30 minutes total.
I
feel like once you know the rules, it'd be super easy to go. The fourth game we played.
Yeah, we did squeeze in quite a few games. We did also spend all afternoon.
We were there for a little bit. All right. So we played Magic Maze. The designer was Casper Lapp. The artist was Guillaume. I think that's how you pronounce it. And the publisher was Pegasus Spiel and Sit Down Games. And this was a 2017 Spiel des Jahres nominee. We have already played and talked about Quest for El Dorado, which was the other nominee, or this one of the other three nominees. And King Domino is on our list of games to play. So, all right. So the description from Board Game Geek. After being stripped of all their possessions, a mage, a warrior, an elf, and a dwarf are forced to go rob the local Magic Maze shopping mall for all the equipment necessary for their next adventure. They agree to map out the labyrinth in its entirety first, then find each individual's favorite store, and then locate the exit. In order to evade the surveillance of the guards who eyed their arrival suspiciously, all four will pull off all their heists simultaneously, then dash to the exit. That's the plan anyway, but can they pull it off? Ba-ba-bum. Mechanics are cooperative play, grid movement, modular board, and variable player powers.
So in picking this out, I can't remember which of us did. Did I notice it? And then you were like, oh, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, I think this was a dual, like you saw it, mentioned it. And I was like, oh, we should definitely play that one. Because this is one that I think everybody on the Dice Tower was like, oh, yeah, it was a great game.
Yeah.
And it was co-op. So,
yeah, which I may have been browsing the co-op shelf since. I do tend to like the co-op games.
Yeah.
And the art to bring in that segment of it does have that more contemporary cartoony aspect to it, which and then, of course, dwarves and elves. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah. And the box art is great because it's got looks like all four of the characters. They're like running for an escalator, but they're all like looking over their shoulder like something is chasing them. So it's a really fun sort of picture, and they're all carrying stuff that's got price tags flying off of it. So it's kind of a pretty fun picture, I think. In the game, each player is going to have a tile, and that tile is going to tell you what you can do. So
like direction-wise.
Yeah, direction-wise. So for instance, BP had a tile that she was allowed to use portals. She could go like north and west, I think.
Yeah.
And then I was able to use escalators, and I could go south and west.
East.
Yeah. So basically, we had the opposite direction. So the way it worked was, is there were four pawns on the map. But you could only move a pawn based on what was on your tile. So if that pawn was in a corner and you couldn't move it anywhere, only I could move it. Now, the kicker to all of this is you can't talk and you're timed. So there's a giant pawn that you can put in front of somebody to let them know. And the rule book says, place the you need to do something pawn in front of the other player and stare at them intently. And then the other thing I really liked about this, and we was that it had sort of a tutorial in it where each scenario built on scenarios before. So mm-hmm. like in the first one,
the first one you could actually talk because yep. it was like, this is easy.
Yeah, the first one you could talk and everybody was going for the same color exit. Mm-hmm. And then the next scenario, everybody had to go for their own colored exit. And then the third one.
I don't remember.
Oh, the third one was anytime we got the flip the timer over spot, we were supposed to change cards. Mm. So you changed powers.
Mm-hmm. We kept forgetting that.
And we kept forgetting that part. So we ended up playing scenario two.
The problem of building on your rules is that, yeah.
So yeah, so recap, I think we played three times in a row.
Yeah.
And we were going to do scenario one, two, three, but we ended up doing two twice, essentially.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the theme?
I mean, I would say, like, as far as the dwarf, elf, that type of thing, did not come through. But the whole idea of when you're playing through it, of stealing something and then dashing, did come through.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird that it was like a, you know, they were, you know, D&D-esque characters. I mean, like, why were they going in a mall?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's cute. And maybe that develops more in later scenarios.
That's true.
Get to.
It also could be that they were just trying to make it less, like, steely.
Yeah.
And more like, this is just fun, whimsical
fantasy
stuff. So that might have been a little bit of it. What did you think of the art?
It was cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simple, like as far as on the tile, obviously the box was interesting enough to catch my eye, but it was very simple to understand what the symbols were on the tiles. That said, though, I think that last one we played, I just remember looking at the whole board going, oh my God, where are all these colors? And losing track of where everything was.
Yeah. And I remember a couple of times, like, we thought we could go a certain direction, but we couldn't because, like, the escalator was going in a different mm-hmm. spot. So there were times where it was just like, it was a little hard to figure out. But I think
that's part of the game.
Yeah. And I think it's part of the game. Yep. What about rules or mechanics?
Cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Real time. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, we enjoy.
Because it brings that extra stress element to it.
Like that, mm-hmm. like that, what is it called? Eustress, right? The good mm-hmm. the good type of stress. And then combine that with not being able to talk.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine having to do Kitchen Rush and you can't talk? God, or Fuse and you can't talk?
Yeah.
I thought it was such a cool, like, twist on, you know, the real-time co-op. Like, here's how we're going to make this game harder.
Yeah. I think we also kept bringing that up as we were playing.
Yeah. Player interaction.
I mean, yeah. yeah. It really is. Even though you're not talking, using that pawn to try to get the other person to move. I mean, and another one of the rules was, right, that you couldn't point.
Yep. Yeah, you can't do no forms of communication. You put the pawn in front of the other player and you stare at them intently.
Yeah, and it was obviously very difficult, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, because... Like, you have all these different powers. There's four pawns on the tables. And all you know is the other person needs you to do something, but you have no idea what you're supposed to do. So it's just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what this thing is that you want me to do. Like, we're all going to die.
Yeah, no. So the player interaction is good. I mean, again, it always is, at least for us, when we play cooperatives, because... we tend to not get so frustrated with each other. And
yeah, I could definitely see, though, with that pawn, like I could definitely see people out there and players that would just like tap it in front of people, like be really irritated. Yeah, super passive aggressive. Because I think the no talking kind of takes out, like, the no talking and the fact that you can't do the powers that I have and vice versa mm-hmm. kind of takes the alpha gamer piece out of it. But I could see somebody using that pawn to try to.
Yeah,
alpha game a little bit. Yeah. but I feel like the talking takes the alpha gamer out of it a bit. So would you play it again?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we played it like 3 times in a row because like we were so enjoying it. And I feel like we could have almost kept playing it.
Yeah, no, it was a ton of fun and I would absolutely play it again. And this is one that I would co-op real time. I would definitely want to play with the three of us with Eric.
Yeah, or even with the kid. Like, I think, playing with children. I mean, depending on the age, like I'm sure it's something 10 plus, which I think if you're into board games, you've probably started to get your children into them that by 10, 11, they'd be.
Which they did do a Magic Maze Kids.
Oh,
so they've
sweet.
Already designed a kids one.
So they even
one.
Have a more junior one. That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
No, it's totally tons of fun. I would definitely, if we had room on our shelves, add it to the shelf collection.
Yeah. I'd be interested because, like, I know you weren't as big a fan of Quest for El Dorado.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Quest for El Dorado. Eric did, too. I'm fairly certain Eric would like this game. We both like this game. So I'm, and these were both, or those were both not the winners of the spiel this year.
Right. So it's going to be interesting to see what King Domino.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see King Domino.
To the table.
What's that?
See what King Domino brings to the table. Tabletop.
Bonus episode. All right. And we weren't kidding when we said we were there all afternoon. So for our fifth game, we played Pandemic Fall of Rome. The designer was Matt Leacock, who's had his hand in every single pandemic ever. He also designed Forbidden Island, Desert and Sky, which when we played Forbidden Island, you could see the pandemic aspects in it. And then it also had Paolo Mori, who did Libertalia. And then the artist was Atha Kanani, who did not all the pandemics, but a bunch of them. And then also artists were Ollie Lawson and Antonio Menez. And the publisher was Asmodee. So the description, at the height of its power, the Roman Empire held more than 2 million square miles of territory containing over 100 million people. Throughout the centuries of its existence, the empire brought major advancements in engineering, architecture, science, art, and literature. By the beginning of the 5th century, decades of political corruption, economic crisis, and an overburdened military had exacted a severe toll on the stability of the empire. This paved the way for severe incursions from aggressive barbarian tribes, leading to a decline from which Rome would not recover. Now, citizens, soldiers, and allies of Rome must unite to protect the empire. I don't know why I did Jurassic
Park. I don't know why you did that either.
All right, mechanics, action point allowance system, cooperative play, hand management, point-to-point movement, set collection, and variable player powers.
I believe you picked this up.
I did pick this up because I heard Eric Summerer, shout out again to the Dice Tower. He talked about it a bunch, and the way he described it, it sounded really cool. And this was actually the first non-disease version of Pandemic that we had ever played. So I was also curious to see how it implemented the pandemic system. So
I mean, and being an historian whose favorite class to teach is the first half of the Western Civ survey, obviously, I was super intrigued.
Obviously.
Because this is one of those great periods to teach in history where there has always been this one kind of version and traditional alignment of, you know, the fall and decay of Rome versus the kind of integration of all of these new peoples and therefore seeing it more as a transformation. So, yeah, it was...
Yeah, and the box art reminds me a lot of Osprey Publishing's books, where they do like the, you know, this is the Battle of Carthage. This is, you know, the uniforms of the 101st Airborne in World War II. So like it's that sort of realistic art style. There's a, is that a Roman centurion and a Roman woman kind of big standing up, holding up, and then they're standing in front of an aqueduct. So you know, kind of the big things that Romans built. And then down below is, you know, some Romans fighting some what appear to be very well armored barbarians.
Okay. I knew you were going to use that term. Well, I'm just going to let it gonna let it slip.
The barbarians. What do you want me to call them? I mean, the game calls them barbarians.
Right. Normally, when we use terms like barbarian, then you're inferring that they are less civilized.
Oh.
And it's a judgment term.
Okay.
And there really weren't necessarily Germanic in the sense of we think of Germans today.
Sure.
So I usually would just call them the migrating tribes of the 4th and 5th century.
Very well. So at the bottom of the box is some very...
I mean, these are probably some kind of Visigoths. Or...
Some very well-armored migrating tribes of the 4th and 5th century fighting some Romans near some rocks. How was that?
Fantastic. Okay.
What was interesting in this one, so you still had the four actions that you could take. What I thought was an interesting take on the whole pandemic system is that instead of when you pull up a city... and you just place the cubes for whatever city it was, the migrating tribes of the 4th and 5th century have a migration path that they follow. So they all the cubes started in individual spots, and then they had a migration path. So if you drew a car that was way down the path, and there were no cubes for that particular tribe leading up to it, you just backed up the migration path until you got to a city that either had a cube in it or had a cube in the city right before it. And that's when you placed it. And then just like Pandemic, if you placed all the cubes of one color, if you ran out of cards from the player deck, I think if any of the cubes reached Rome, and if you hit your outbreak, although it didn't call it outbreak, do you remember what it called it? It's like invasion or something like that. I forget what it was called. But yeah, so that version of outbreaks, if you had... eight, just like in regular pandemic, that would also lose. The other change that they had is obviously there weren't research stations to find a cure for the Visigoths.
Because they're not a disease.
Yeah. You had to make a treaty with them. So you had to go to a place on the board that had one of the cube colors for that tribe. And then each tribe had a... So instead of having, hey, every... disease needs five cards. Each tribe had a different number that it needed. So I think the Visigoths were the highest at five. And then some of the, there was another tribe that you only needed three cards of that color.
I think the Vandals.
The Vandals. You only needed three cards of that color to treaty,
alliance.
Basically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, alliance.
I think they were alliances. And what was also cool about that aspect is even though you had an alliance with him, it wasn't like in Pandemic where if you've had it cured... Like they, you could still have to battle them.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And man, it was, and you were able to, when you made the alliance, you were able to turn them into legionnaires and you could create armies. I thought that was cool too. So it added like a battling aspect. So you had to battle the Goths. So it wasn't like the, so it was the cure action essentially, but there was dice rolling involved to
So it wasn't guaranteed.
Yeah. It wasn't a guarantee. You just get rid of two cubes.
Yeah.
So we lost.
Yeah. I mean, which is pretty typical for a pandemic.
Yes.
I mean, I think whenever you play a pandemic game, the first
couple times. Just assume you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Sackings. That's what it was. So instead of outbreaks, it's sackings. So we lost due to sackings. We were sacked one too many times. So what do you think of the theme?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Again, one of my favorite periods in history to teach.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we've played a ton of games that are themed in the Roman period. Well, Spartacus, I think, would be the one. So there are a lot of games with that theme. It's a very popular theme, but I thought this was a pretty cool take.
Yeah, I think because, again, it doesn't do that kind of glorification of Rome as like the height of civilization as we had ever known it. And, you know, these hordes of barbarians coming to shut out the light.
You mean hordes of migrating tribes from the 4th and 5th century.
Yeah, exactly.
You said barbarians.
I know. I was going like this. It was opposite of that.
Oh, okay.
You got to listen to all the words that come out of my mouth.
Sorry. I thought we were using migrating tribes of the 4th and 5th century. What did you think of the art?
I mean, it's okay. I mean, like, I mean, the box art is what it is. It's kind of got that, you know, your general kind of Canton kind of, you know, board game typical art. And then the board itself is just a map of Europe.
Yeah. Which we found difficult because we've played tons of Pandemic. So we know where most of the cities are there. So then we were trying to find all these Latin cities, like trying to say them.
I'm glad you brought that up because that then reminded me that that was another actually cool aspect in it is that the cities were in their Latin And the cards also, when you drew them, had Latin sayings as well.
And they had the Latin saying and the translation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. And then all the event cards were all the Latin. They all had Latin names. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think the art.
Now, what would have been really funny, too, is instead of pips, if the dice had Roman numerals.
Oh, Roman numerals. That would have been good. Yeah.
Yeah, since I think you don't have to worry about zero.
Yeah, I think the art just in general, like most Pandemic games, like it's nice art, but you're not looking at the art while you're playing the game. And, you know, other than the character cards, there really isn't a whole lot of art beyond that.
Yeah, do you remember which characters we were again? Because just like in Pandemic and all the Pandemics, right, you get a special role.
Yeah, so BP was the consul, and I was the Regina Foderata, which gave me some military powers, and I forget what yours did.
I think I could recruit and move armies, because the consul, of course, is the highest position in Roman politics.
Yeah, that's what, because you were able to recruit at a outpost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we've already talked a bunch about mechanics. I mean, it's not any different from Pandemic, like the base mechanics to it. But I thought
the twist.
Yeah, this wasn't just a straight reskin of Pandemic. It was Pandemic twisted enough that it wasn't the same game.
Right.
And that the twists that they did were, I think we both thought, were really cool.
Yeah. I know you've talked about it a lot since playing, because we actually played this a couple weeks ago. So,
yeah. And again, this was the first time that we'd played a Pandemic that wasn't Pandemic.
Right.
Which is a weird statement to say. Rules. Obviously, learning the new bits and the twists took us a little bit. I think the first time that we drew
I think we did some the card. Yeah,
for the migration piece. Like, that took a minute to try and figure out.
I think we forgot some stuff every once in a while.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you've played Pandemic, or I'm going to guess any version of a Pandemic, this game would not be... It would not take long to pick up and play. The game plays in 45 to 60 minutes. So even, you know, learning the new bits and going through the instruction booklet to make sure we were doing stuff correctly, we were still at the max end of their suggested playtime. So, and then player interaction. So we still had to do what we always do in Pandemic, where we have to stop ourselves from planning. We have to stop ourselves from planning, because if we don't, we will forget something.
Yeah.
So we have to be like, no planning.
Let's just keep it to yourself. The action.
Finish out what we're doing, and then we can discuss plans.
Right.
Because can't tell you how many times we've played Pandemic and started coming up with plans, and then we're
every single time we play.
Like, crap. Did we draw one card?
Have we already drawn?
Yeah. Yep. Whose turn is it? All right. Then that leads us into would you play it again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we have brought up that, at least I know I like, right, Pandemic in almost every episode, especially when we talk about mechanics. I am a big fan of cooperative. I mean, I guess I've also been very lucky in that I've always got to play with, you know, very good cooperative players. Nobody has ever tried to dominate. And this theme and this take on it is definitely very interesting. I think, though, if you're new to the Pandemic ones, this might be maybe a little more challenging than the disease pandemic. Teach. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought, like, I don't, so I've said
the
in the past.
The disease pandemic is the entry.
Yeah. Well, I've brought up in the past that I think Pandemic is a great intro game to board gamers. I'm not sure I would use this version of Pandemic. I think there's a little bit more to it. Whereas regular Pandemic, it's very easy to teach. You might not win all the time, but it's super easy to teach. Yeah. We've done it a couple of times with a couple sets of new people using Pandemic. I think this is more a game for people who have played Pandemic a couple of times, understand the mechanics of Pandemic, and then now you can change them to fit this theme.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Kiwi.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I would replace our Pandemic.
No.
But I would definitely, like, if someone was like, hey, let's play Pandemic Fall of Rome, I'd be like, heck yeah, let's play this.
Yeah.
Because it was really fun.
If you would like to reach out to us with any additional suggestions at board game cafes that we can show up and find new games to play, two-player games or cooperative games or otherwise, feel free to hit us up on the social medias. Our handle is at First Turncast on both Twitter and Instagram. And we look forward to playing more games.
I like that we're skipping. Would you pick this up off the shelf? Because we did, in fact, pick it up off the shelf. This is a bonus episode.
Yay!
Bonus.